Okay, good evening, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to the Old Stone House, and welcome to the Musical Ecology Series. This is our second concert of the season. This is a monthly symposium, we like to call it, here at the Old Stone House on the second Thursday of every month. We began the season last month, and we have a whole schedule of concerts on this card, which I have plenty of them here. There's some at the door, so I hope you'll join us and stay in touch with us through our website at musicalecologies.net. And so tonight we're very pleased to have with us Guy Klusevic, wonderful composer, accordionist. Welcome, Guy. So with our series, we always begin our evening with a conversation. So let's start that. So welcome and welcome to Park Slope. And we have a busy program, a full program tonight. And but to start things off, I guess if you maybe you could fill me in a little bit on your background. I mean, I know some of your background, but how it is that you came to be an accordionist, for example. That would be a story that I would love to learn something more about. So maybe that's a place to start.
Well, it's because I decided that when I was 5 years old, and nobody should really blame me for that. But I actually, it was on television all the time when I was growing up. I grew up in the 1950s, and it was the most popular instrument in America at the time. And you could not watch a week's worth of television and not see it on 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times.
Wow.
So I saw it all the time. And Dick Contino, the guy who's still playing to this day, was winning the amateur hour week after week after week. And he was a great looking guy with big pecs and was playing this accordion, and he was the star of the show. And I loved the way the thing moved. And So I told my dad I wanted to play, and he said, well, you're a little young and they're kind of expensive. And but I wore him out, and he bought me my first instrument when I was 5.
And you were 5? My goodness. Wow, so you've been playing since you were 5. I mean, I guess, so you took lessons at that point, or just taught yourself, or?
There was a guy who came door to door at the beginning, and then I eventually moved to Western Pennsylvania, and my relatives found me a really, really good teacher. At that time, any town with more than about 20,000 people, you would find an accordion studio in the town. Mm-hmm. There was hundreds and hundreds of studios with really good teachers. Mm-hmm. And I had one of the best in the country.
Wow.
It was kind of pure luck, because my parents got divorced and I was raised by my aunt. And so we totally moved location. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was near there, and he was phenomenal. He raised me on two things, on genre music and on classical music, and it's something that I do to this day in my own writing. Mm-hmm. And then from that, I got interested in composing music, and here I am.
There you are, right. Well, so I'm certainly by no means an expert in the accordion, the greater accordion sort of community, but it seems to me, what I do know of it, that you seem to occupy a pretty unique place within that, among accordionists, for being someone who is very involved in contemporary music. Is that true? I mean, are there other accordionists that are playing, you know, downtown Manhattan repertoire as well, or even close?
Well, in Europe, there are dozens and dozens.
I see.
I mean, the one thing, that support network that you have in Europe that you don't have here, is being able to teach music at the high school level. They have these almost professional high schools, mm-hmm. where you can really concentrate on music.
Right.
And they have accordion teachers, mm-hmm. Specifically an accordion teacher.
Right.
And so the professionals that I know in Europe, who a lot of them who specialize in contemporary music, they have a day job.
Right.
They have this teaching job. So the other great thing about that is that then they're passing on. They have pedagogical pedigree. Mm-hmm. And they're passing on great technique and a love of music and musicality and a love of new music. So they're passing out. We don't have that here. I mean, in New York, it was me and William Schimmel, who mm-hmm. came up around the same time, and we were doing a lot of new music. There are really, I can't name anybody under 50 now in this area who's doing the same kind of things. The most interesting activities that are happening with the instrument that I see is happening in, with bands and with folk music and with people doing creative music, but not in the sort of what we used to call contemporary music field. It's it's more people who are coming from another area and playing accordion sometimes very, very well. There's a lot of very good accordion players in New York, just not from the same kind of
So the generation isn't so much an issue. I mean, there are plenty of young accordionists. They're just, there aren't so many interested in new music, I guess, or
no, they're doing it a different way. And a lot of them started off on, in this country, started off on piano and started playing accordion as a double because they loved the sound or they wanted to play kinds of genre music that don't have a piano in them, don't have a keyboard in them, except for accordion. And I know a lot of people, Alan Byrne came to the accordion that way, and Art Bailey came to the accordion that way, I believe, and there's many, many people who came to that, and Bill Schimmel has been a teacher of many of these people who were pianists who wanted to learn to play accordion, and so he's created a whole stable of artists like that, but what's really died in this country is the pedagogy. So there have been a lot of people who are playing now, but there are no kids playing. I mean, by no kids, I mean hardly any, not enough to support accordion studios anymore.
Right. Now, was this accordion studio culture, was that more endemic to where you grew up in Pennsylvania, or was that something in the 50s and 60s that we would have found anywhere? I mean, I wouldn't know.
Well, I grew up in the Pittsburgh area, and you would certainly find it there, but you would find it in the places where there are ethnic communities from Eastern Europe. So you'd find it in Buffalo and Chicago and Cleveland, and you'd find it if they were in L.A., but they were really scattered throughout the whole country. Milwaukee, of course, was another big one.
Right, and Chicago, maybe.
Chicago was huge. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, so pretty early in your life, I mean, as I understand it, you spent some time at CalArts, right? So that's a pretty experimental school. I mean, I guess in your college years, you must have already had some pretty strong direction, a little bit off script, so to speak. Is that right? Or tell me about your time at CalArts.
Well, I have to kind of back up a little because I went to a small school in Pennsylvania called Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And it started off as Indiana State College, Teachers College. And I was very lucky that there was a composition teacher whose name was Robert Burnett, and he was writing pieces for the Pittsburgh Symphony, and he was a very, very good teacher. And my third year there, they decided they wanted to go to the university route, and they instituted a liberal arts curriculum. And I switched over to liberal arts, and I became the first music student to graduate in liberal arts. And because I was the only one, I had all private lessons because they had to offer the curriculum, but I was the only student who flipped over. So I had all private lessons, composition, orchestration, harmony, advanced theory. So I was very lucky. And then when I wanted to go to graduate school, he said to me, Morton Subotnick is teaching at the University of Pittsburgh for a year. He's a brilliant with both composition teaching and with electronic music, and I think you'd really gain a lot by going there. I went there. I studied with him, and then he went out to CalArts, and I followed him out for a year so I could keep studying with him.
I see. So that was really like the first year of CalArts, basically?
Yes. Or? Well, it was the second year. The first year they were in a temporary housing. I was there the first year they were in their permanent home.
I see. So it was really incidental in a sense. I mean, you were mainly wanting to continue working with Mort, and so it happened to take you to CalArts. So you spent 1 year with him, and then from there you went somewhere else, I guess.
Right. But the contemporary music thing started when I was a teenager because the American Accordionist Association was commissioning composers to write for accordion. There was a very influential woman named Elsie Bennett, and she saw that the future of the instrument in the concert hall depended on generating a repertoire just for the instrument. So they started commissioning people like Virgil Thompson, and American Teachers Guild commissioned Alan Hovhaness, and Paul Creston and Nicholas Flagello. And I started playing that music when I was a teenager because you had to play it for competitions. And I fell in love with the music.
I see.
And I could immediately tell that it felt different because it was written for my instrument. Whereas when I played transcriptions, they felt, something always felt off to me. And that was my introduction to contemporary music. And then from that, then I became interested in composition.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess I'm unaware of this repertoire. I guess it constitutes a full repertoire of these. I guess they were orchestral pieces mm-hmm. with accordion or chamber composition?
No, they were mostly solo pieces.
Solo
there were a couple orchestral, and they're mainly solo. They were for, well, we haven't talked about the different kinds of accordions, but they were for the standard accordion, which has a standard bass with bass notes and preset chords. So it was a very only the people who play that instrument can play that repertoire. When I was about 20, I started playing a whole other instrument called the free bass accordion, and that has all single notes.
I see.
And that has its own repertoire. And that's most of that repertoire is from Europe or Asia. But I have an instrument which has both systems. It's called a converter. I can hit a switch and all the chords become single notes. So I can play genre music and I can hit the converter switch and then I can play extended melodic lines and chord inversions and things like that.
I see. Wow. So I guess obviously the single note version is a little more complicated or at least more involved, you know, since, you know, ornamenting or creating more activity involves individual notes, or is it more difficult or less difficult? Or?
Well, the traditional left hand was made to play accompaniments.
Right.
It's in a circle of fifths, and it's very great for playing very fast accompaniment rhythms. But the free bass being all single notes, if you want to play a chord, you got to form the chord.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
And so it's not necessarily more difficult, but it's the thinking between the two hands is different because now they're equal.
Right.
Before the right hand was the boss, and the left hand was saying, okay, I got to support my boss. And now it's only limited by your imagination and your technique.
I see.
Because they really are equal partners.
Right.
With the free bass.
And I gather the accompaniment version of the instrument is far more common. Is that
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Because that's mostly what I always think of.
When you think of accordion, that's what you think of.
Yeah. You know, right. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's so great. So you're playing a Titano. I mean, I only know a little bit about accordions, but I know that that's a fairly major league accordion, right? Have you always had the Titano, or
no? I used to play a Giulietti, which was also a beautiful instrument, and that's one I played for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. But then I wanted to have a converter, and Mr. Giulietti had already passed away, and they weren't making new ones anymore. And the particular kind I needed, I could only get through Titano. So I made the switch because I needed my tool.
Right. Well, great. Well, so that gives us definitely a background here with the accordion. So let's talk a little bit about the program tonight. So we have the theme tonight is music for collaborations. So this is a collection of pieces from your career. I guess it goes back 25 years almost. Is
87
that right?
Is the
yeah.
Year, yeah.
So this is so you've done a lot of collaborations. So we have some pieces that were written for dance, some for video pieces, experimental theater, ebook. So you've done a lot of collaborating, obviously. So let's just briefly go over some of the highlights here. I mean, so Altered Landscape was for a David Dorfman dance. I guess when we were putting this program together, you explained that these pieces aren't really heard a great deal presently, right? Or at least they had their run at the time. And
well, some of them are in my solo repertoire. Altered Landscapes has come and gone from my solo repertoire over periods of time. Sometimes I revise it, but for 5 years it was a major part of my repertoire, mm-hmm. and then I wrote a lot of new stuff, and it took a went in the drawer for a while, and then I dusted it off a few years ago, and mm-hmm. I've been playing it.
I see.
The Victoria Marx piece, Inside Score, has a video component, and I've done it as a concert piece without the video, but I don't get to do it with the video that much. This is only about maybe the fifth time I've gotten to do it with the video, mm-hmm. so that part is fun. Mm-hmm. The Dan Herlin piece I haven't played as a concert piece very much, no.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's great. And then the accordion Misdemeanors, so this was incidental music to an audiobook that appeared just at certain junctures?
Between chapters. Yeah, the book is basically a series of chapters about different immigrant communities in the United States that have the accordion as a central part of their culture. And she uses a little green accordion that travels from one culture to another, playing their musics along the way. And it's a very, very dark book. But What it does point out is how the culture helps keep a community together. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for an example, when my wife and I went to Ireland many decades ago, we went there looking for Irish traditional music. All we could find was American country and Western music. The best Irish music at that time was being played in New York and Chicago and places like that. Because here it became a source of identity.
Right.
In Ireland it became a source of embarrassment. It was working class music and they wanted to be sophisticated. And that's happened in almost every ethnic community.
Right.
Like it happened in Tex-Mex community. It happened in the Cajun community. That's when they got to a certain point, they were embarrassed by their culture. They wanted to become mainstream and middle class. They dropped it, and then at a certain point, it also became a place to grab onto for their ethnic identity.
Right.
People like Marc Savoy brought back traditional Cajun music because it had become Zydeco. Everything was Zydeco, and the urbanized version and the original country and small town version had kind of disappeared.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he helped kind of revitalize that as being equal to the Zydeco version of that music. And Flaco Jimenez did the same with the Tex-Mex music. And the proliferation of world music on labels like Arhuli in the 80s made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's a theme in the Accordion Crimes novel, mm-hmm. in any case.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Well, it looks like an interesting program. So, a wonderful program. What are the things are you involved in these days? I mean, I guess you're equal. Are most of your performances of your own music, or
yes?
So what are some projects, collaborations, or repertoire or programs that are coming up for you?
Well, right now I'm involved in trying to generate some new repertoire and also to codify what I've been writing music since the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in various states of presentation.
Right.
Because a lot of it is solo music and some of it I haven't notated. Altered Landscapes that I'm playing tonight is 17 minutes long and I've never notated it.
Uh-huh.
I learned it by rote. I developed it with David Dorfman in workshop.
Mm-hmm.
He would show me a movement section. I would improvise. If we liked the material together, then I would go home and work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned it by rote so that I could, because I knew he wanted me to play it by memory, so I didn't want to have to learn it from the page.
Right.
So I learned it as I went along, a minute at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never been notated. There are other pieces like that that are just sketches. So I'm actually going to spend the next year or so. I'm lucky that more and more accordionists are asking if they can play my music, which was not a problem for me years ago. And now they want to play it, and I would love to have them play it, so I need to get it in shape. So I'm working on that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I figure that I have 150 pieces so far, and I'd rather have those be able to be played than, you know, write 150 more in the short term.
Right. Great, and you have a residency coming up?
I'm going to the McDowell Colony at the end of this month for 6 weeks, yes.
Right, and so that'll be an opportunity to, I guess, continue to pull some of this stuff together and...
Well, the big thing is I'm doing a residency at the Stone in Manhattan in March
for
a week.
In March.
Six concerts every night, a different project. So I'm going to the McDowell Colony to whip that into shape.
Oh, I see.
Editorial-wise, I got to arrange, I got to edit. I'm going to compose some, and I got 6 weeks to try to get. So you're 1 week for each project.
That's great. So yeah. Tell when again is the? It's in March. Which week of March?
March 17th.
March 17th to 22nd
or whatever it is. So it's Tuesday through Saturday.
Right.
Tuesday through Sunday.
At the Stone, which is for those of you unaware, it's a venue in the Lower East Side. What, Second and C, something like that?
Yeah.
Second Street and Avenue C.
I only play with venues in venues that have Stone in the.
Right. That's right.
So I'm doing a Stone Pony.
The Stone Tour. Excellent. Well, great. Well,
Stonehenge, right?
Well, great. Well, I guess that's all I have at this point. Are there any questions for Guy before we get on with the program?
Are you going to play anything?
Of course. So you're playing strict acoustically tonight, which I gather that's normal for you. But I'm wondering. I mean, in this technological age, I mean, do any of your projects involve technology, electronics, processing? So you're a straight accordionist.
I like the sound, acoustic sound of the instrument. I'm in love with that. And I'm also not great with electronics. So
mm-hmm.
I love what Pauline Oliveros does, but she She used to build her own electronic equipment.
Right.
So what I love about what she does is that she creates her own world, her own sonic world, sure. Because she knew how to build things at the beginning, and people like David Tudor, same mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. And so I admire people like that who get into electronics through that medium, and right. It's never been that interesting. What I learned from Subotnick was about sound and timbre, mm-hmm. and from doing electronic music and sustained tones. It made me love sustained tones, because with an oscillator, you just put it on and it will stay on until you turn it off.
Absolutely.
And I realized the beauty of sustained tones on the accordion, and you'll hear a couple passages in Altered Landscapes which really take advantage of the sustained possibilities, which was not something I was really doing very much of before I worked with him.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, wonderful. Well, let's get into it.
Let's play some
and,
stuff.
Yeah. So we'll just take like two to 5 minutes here to reset, and then so we'll have five pieces without interruption or without an intermission at least,
yeah.
and that will be the program. Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.